Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. Today is Thursday, February the 5th, 2026, and we're continuing our study of the Big Book in the chapter There is a Solution on page 18, the first paragraph, An Illness of This Sort. And reading right through to anyone can increase the list. Today's readers are the 12 steps, Bev M, 12 traditions, Anne Marie M, and readers of the text, Wendy M, Martha Z, and Susan SH. The share ID for yesterday, Wednesday, February the 4th, the 7 a.m. meeting is 23183. That's 23183, and the 10 a.m. meeting is 23184. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Bev M. is going to read the 12 steps for us. Good morning, Bev.
Good morning. This is Bev M., gratefully recovered in Wisconsin. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Bev M. And Anne Marie M. is going to read the 12 traditions. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hi, Lynn. Good morning. It's Anne Marie M. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend outside outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Anne Marie M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we're resuming our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter, There is a Solution, page 18, the first paragraph, An Illness of This Sort. And this morning, Wendy M. is going to read for us. Good morning, Wendy. Wendy, please press star 1 to unmute.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you. My name is Wendy M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. An illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it an illness, involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it, there goes annihilation of all the things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. I'm so thankful that I get to read this paragraph this morning and share, and just so thankful for this meeting where we do get to just read a paragraph at a time and be reminded. For me, this morning in reading this paragraph, I'm reminded from when I first stepped into the rooms of OA and in 2018, and I'm thankful the meetings that I attended, this is where the book that we read from. And I can remember reading this paragraph and hearing that it's an illness. And just the guilt and the shame and the remorse falling with that one simple word of that this is an illness. I had lived decades of my life where I thought something like, there was something I'm doing wrong, like I don't have enough willpower, I don't have enough motivation. Like something is in just incredibly wrong with me, and the weight is piling up and piling up. And I was over 300 pounds when I came into the rooms in 2018. And I didn't want to live anymore. And that word, illness, and, you know, that if a person has cancer, all are sorry for him and no one is angry or hurt. And comparing it to something like that, where the other thing that came to me was I needed a treatment plan. And there is a treatment plan in this book. And I mean, the title of the chapter is There is a Solution. So for me, there is a solution and there is a treatment plan, and I don't have to live in that state of the annihilation of all things worthwhile anymore today.
So, Wendy, we lost you. Can you press star one to unmute again, please? Well, I guess we've lost Wendy then, so we will move on. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once, as it does help me hear everybody. I would like to
Harlan
share.
Harlan G.
What? Gotcha, Harlan.
Jackie B.
B.G.
Dorita
P. I heard Harlan. I heard Jackie. I heard Dorita. But there was somebody I missed there.
Blanca B.G.
Thank you.
B.
Okay, who else would like to share? I've got Harlan G, Jackie B, Blanca BG, Dorita P, Pete B. Anyone else?
Shanna C.
Okay. All righty. And Wendy, if you're out there and you get back on, you're welcome to finish your share. So let's see. Here we go. We've got Harlan G, followed by Jackie B. Good morning, Harlan.
Good morning, Lynn. Thanks for your service. The world that I was born into humiliated me, excoriated me, shamed me, and beat me in every way you could beat a human being from the time I was 3-4 years old, because I had an illness and nobody, including me, knew it. Doctors would scream and yell at my mother and scream and yell at my father. Doctors would start screaming and yelling at me. I was humiliated in every way you can humiliate a human being, and I took it in as my fault. I took it in as I lack willpower. I lack the strength, the discipline that the world was telling me I needed to lose weight. And the world lied to me. They said, if you lose weight, everything will be okay. I've lost over 500 pounds. And as Clancy Imeslin teaches us, no matter how evolved your recovery gets, we will never rise above the level of a human being. And there are things that happen in recovery that are lousy, and there are things that happen that are miraculous. Thank God the miraculous far outweigh the lousy. But this disease isolated me. And it marginalized me, and I didn't know where to turn. I didn't know that there was a place. I didn't know that there was a book. I didn't know that there was a way out. I had no clue. I had no idea. And so I cried a lot of tears, trust me. And I wanted to die a lot more than I wanted to live. And then one day I read page 18 at the top, and it said, an illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it an illness. It's not my fault. Now that I know that there is recovery and how to do recovery, now I have a choice to make. But hunkered down on my own willpower, hunkered down on discipline, I scream, beat me down every time. I am alive today because of this program. I am living a life today because of this program. I live a life today free of humiliation, free of marginalization, free of the yelling and screaming. I live a life today, and I walk about a free man. I can look the world in the eye. I can be alive today because of this program. This is the greatest way of life. I paid a hefty price for my seat here, but at least I'm not going to break the furniture. I'm not going to break the furniture today, I hope. Okay, Lynn, thanks for your service. With that, I will pass.
Thank you, Harlan G. from Scottsdale, Arizona. Jackie V., good morning, followed by Blanca B.G. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, I'm Jackie B. from the Bronx. Thank you so much, everybody, for your service and your shares. For me, this program has, you know, I came into the room very angry. And when I came into these rooms, can I be heard? I hear somebody.
Yep, I hear you okay. And somebody else who's okay. Unmuted. Sorry.
Okay. It's okay. I came into these rooms a very angry person. I came blaming my alcoholic father and my mother, my untreated, compulsive, codependent mother. And you know what? I found out through the Big Book and through this program that, yes, I might have started out thinking I was the victim, but I became the victim and the perpetrator over the years. And with this program, I learned that I have an illness, and that illness gets arrested every single day I work this program. That means that I go through the steps, and then I work the steps. I remember that I am not the beginning and the end of the earth. I am a participant, and I am a servant of my higher power that I reach out to other people. I am amazed today when I look at myself, what a happy and joyous and free person I am, even on the bad days, because I don't live in the obsession anymore. I do not ingest those things that will trigger the obsession and the craving, and then I have to work the steps. How do I do that? I don't go and start to read other people's minds. I don't read what I think people think of me. I no longer put expectations on others. What I do is I be of service to other people. I be present to other people. I look at my motives every day. I take an inventory every day. I write my food down every day. I send it to another compulsive overeater, and I stay present. Even when I have stressors every day, but I know I have a step to work them that will help and keep me healthy. The amazing part is I no longer use a scooter. I no longer use a walker. I no longer use a cane. I can walk today. I can walk up a flight of steps today. I can go and be of service when my family says, could you babysit for me? I can be of service when somebody in fellowship says, I can't stop eating. What am I going to do? I am willing to give up anything and every type of food if it's going to trigger or make me obsess over it, even if it's a carrot. The bottom line is that I choose to live today in recovery.
Time,
and that's
please.
What I get from this program. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie B. from the Bronx. Blanca BG, it's your turn, followed by Dorita P. Good morning, Blanca. Blanca Priest, press star 1 to unmute.
I'm sorry. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, moderator. Thank you for your service, brothers and sisters in program. This is Blanca BG from Central Florida. This is a painful, it's a beautiful paragraph, but a painful one for me because it brings up my past, my behavior. You know, I was a tornado, you know, just busting through people's lives without any regard or very little regard for their feelings. How I left them feeling, how I left ruin in my wake, you know, and never looked back. I couldn't make relationships work, any type of relationship, friendships, romantic, just they all dissolved in the air, dissolved in my hands, and my being left perplexed. What happened? It was always what happened. But then just moving on to the next wreck and ruin I could do. today, I don't do that anymore. Not mindfully. I have mindfulness and awareness. And I live a life that is beyond my wildest dreams because I have been through this program, I have forgiven myself. And some others have forgiven me as well. Not everyone. And that's okay. I remind myself every day I'm not responsible for my disease, but I am responsible for my recovery. And I continue to work on that. And when I do have relapses, and I do, not just physical, but emotional as well, I immediately make my amends. As one of my sisters in program just said, I try to be useful now instead of complaining and criticizing. When I start to worry about how others think or feel about me or how the world is treating me, oh, poor me, poor me, pour me a drink. I remember that I must concentrate on helping others and being useful in this world. And I will pass. On that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Blanca BG. Dorita P., it's your turn, followed by Pete B. Good morning, Dorita.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you so much for your service. My name is Dorita Pippen. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm really grateful to be here. It's a privilege and honor to get a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Everybody did not get this opportunity for whatever reason. So I'm really grateful I have a seat here. Yes, an illness of this sort is in its contrast with cancer. I was just sharing with somebody a couple days ago that, in one of my hospitalizations, I had a doctor ask me, what are your hobbies? And I told him, eating is my hobby. And I was there for about a week, and it was like every day. So he asked me several times, 3 or 4 times, about hobbies, and I'm telling him that my hobby is eating. And, you know, he would say, I think, if I remember, like, well, do you have any more hobbies? Because I'm sitting in front of them close to around 250 anyway. He couldn't do anything with that. You know, he couldn't, you know, that's why he kept asking me over and over again. And I'm just really grateful for this program because, you know, I have been saved. I have been saved. I lost 100 pounds and kept off for about 14 years. And I guess I'm currently in relapse, I guess, or coming out. It's really hard for me to even say because I just finished the abstinent breakfast and I'm on this meeting. So I never know whether to say I'm in relapse or I'm coming out of relapse. Anyway, I'm grateful that I'm here. And I'm grateful that I have hope because that's what I didn't have before was hope. And so if there's any newcomers on the line, you know, keep coming back. And the reason why I'm in relapse or the reason why I relapsed is because I stopped working the program. Now, I could give you 100 reasons why I stopped, but the fact is I stopped. And that's why I gained most of the weight back. That's why. So I'm really grateful. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Dorita P. from Ohio. Pete B., it's your turn, followed by Shanna C. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Lynn. Thanks so much for taking the meeting. I really appreciate your service. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy in Pennsylvania. An illness of this sort, right? What is the illness? Right? What is the illness? And you hear a lot of different things in the meetings about what the illness is, you know, what the illness entails, right? And those are good opinions, observations, and like subscribing to like the group think or the group narrative about the condition. But I heard something brilliant the other day in a meeting. You know, the woman shared that, you know, don't ever let somebody tell you what the program is. And that was brilliant. I mean, because it's true, you know, there are facts that the book lists, right? She then went on to tell everybody what the program was, which was, you know, vague, ambiguous references to what the some of what the book says, but that's irrelevant, right? But we have a piece of literature that explains the fact of the condition, right? Early on, it says the common peril. What, right? Right. So what's the common peril? Common peril means problem. Well, the doctor describes it, and the doctor says that we have one symptom in common, one symptom. That is, we can't start eating certain foods, certain ingredients, certain or engage in certain behaviors without triggering the phenomenon of craving. That's the one, that's the problem. Coupled with the mental obsession, right? What's the mental obsession? The obsession that I can somehow, some way control and manage these foods that I know I can't, right? It's not, you know, we're not solving for, you know, loneliness or isolation. That's not what we're solving for. We're not solving for not being able to fit in. That's not what we're solving for. Do those things get addressed? Yes, they do. They get addressed. They get rectified. But the illness is an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind, right? The allergy of the body gets addressed by abstinence. We don't trigger the obsession. We don't trigger craving by not ingesting the substance that causes it. The mind gets treated by a spiritual solution. Right? And the spiritual solution, these 12 steps produce an essential psychic change, allows us to be restored to sanity, to be able to utilize the resources that have been provided to us by the Creator that provides us with the agency that's necessary to function and live. Right? We don't learn, we're not supposed to adopt dependence and reliance on things that can't meet our need, right? And human power can't meet our need. New practices and new solutions and making phone calls and reporting my food and all those things, they're all fine, useful tools. But they don't solve the problem. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Pete B. from Pennsylvania. Shauna C., good morning. It's your turn.
Good morning, Lynn. This is Shauna C., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Tennessee. And it's a miracle for my life. And so grateful to be on the line this morning. And thank you for your service and everyone else who shared. You know, I I remember buying into, because I felt like I was supposed to buy into the idea that this was an illness, and my thought was, okay, this is just what people are telling themselves to make themselves feel better, and if it makes them, you know, get better to think about it that way, then great, go for it. But in the back of my mind, there's a lurking notion, this really isn't an illness. This is just a really bad habit that is really not that big a deal. And realistically, picking that apart, you know, that's exactly what it looks like to most people on the outside looking in who do not have this problem. I have a family member from a long time ago that, for whatever reason, as a kid, I had brought up the fact that I had learned that alcoholism, that people who drink too much, maybe it's a disease. I'd heard it. I picked it up somewhere. I was probably 10 or 12 years old. And my then religious uncle at the time, he looked me in the eye and he said, that is absolutely not true, blah, 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 blah. You know, that's not an illness, you know, this and that and other. And I was like, okay, you know, this person in my life who loves and cares about me must be telling me the truth. I must have been wrong. And so that old prejudice stayed in my mind for the longest time when it came to any kind of addiction, disease, whatever. And so grateful that these steps, if you're working with somebody who has been properly armed with the facts about themselves, if, you know, if you're new or whatever, and can share from their own experience the honest prejudices that they've had about ideas about the disease itself, the program itself, all of that. Truth is, we have no monopoly on God. This man who told me this was sharing from his own experience of the fact that he was a very, very, very heavy drinker, maybe even alcoholic at one point. He had a spiritual experience, not in recovery, but he had a spiritual experience of some sort. And he was able to put it down for the rest of his life and live a happy life and helped a lot of people. And so the truth of the matter is, you know, it's easy for me at least to look back in my experience and get mad at the people who I was made fun of horrifically. And I absolutely empathize. I've been there as a kid, with the weight and the food, and it's all that mattered. And the other side of this coin is when I did get to the point where I looked amazing, I honestly felt that I had arrived and everything was okay. But that's the other side of this disease for me anyway, is how I can get hijacked, because looking good works for a little while until it doesn't. And but anyway, grateful that both aspects of this disease can be taken care of through the practical program of action that worked for the people in this book that had their own experience that are sharing it with me, who understand allergy, understand
time, please.
Thank you. And outline that program of action. It's what's been done for me, and the miraculous has actually happened in my life. It's great to be neutral this morning, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Shanna C. from Tennessee. For those of us who might have come on the line a little bit later this morning, just to let you know where we are continuing our study of the Big Book. In the chapter, There is a Solution, on page 18, the first paragraph, An Illness of This Sort. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It really does help me hear everybody. Who would
Tony
like to share?
G. Leah S.
Darian K.
Larry K.
Okay, hang on a second, please. I heard Tony B, Larry S. Sorry, Leah S. Darren K, Larry K, and I know I missed a couple of people. Who did I miss, please?
Christiana K.
Okay. All right. So we've got Tony B, Leah S, Darian K, Larry K, Christiana K, and Melissa B. Great. Let's work with that lineup and we'll see how we do. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for sharing. My name's Tony B. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. So, why, I wondered, does it involve those about us in a way no other human sickness can? I think it's because it doesn't make sense to those around us. People just do not get it if they are not one of us. It's very, very difficult. Why the fellowship is so important, because we get the identification with one another. So cancer is recognized as an illness. No one is angry or hurt. And why do those about me get angry or hurt? I think it's because it seems very obvious to them what I need to do. I need to moderate. I need to just pull my socks up, just get it together, just stop what I'm doing, you know, get a grip. And, you know, for me, it's really important to know what I have, this illness of compulsive overeating, as it's described in the doctor's opinion. I am a real compulsive overeater, and I need to know that in order that I can come here and get this common solution, which is God. It's a spiritual solution. It's an uncommon solution. It's not what everyone would expect. You know, if someone has cancer, the family are involved, but they defer to the doctors. You know, they understand that the wisdom of the doctors is what's going to help. But with an illness like this, which is a spiritual illness, they don't get the fact that it's God I need, you know, it's a higher power that I need. That is a difficult thing for anybody to grasp. It's difficult for me to grasp sometimes, but I grasp it, I must, and I do. And it's a beautiful, you know, program that we're given. And this volume informs and comforts, you know, just to go on to that next little bit. But absolutely, it engulfed those about me, not getting it. You know, I would go to bed crying. My husband would say to me, "It's okay. Tomorrow's another day. It's not the end of the world." But for me, it was. It felt like a matter of life and death, because, well, it is a matter of life and death. And you know, I wasn't just going to pull my socks up and do a bit better tomorrow and limp along. So with that, I'll share the time. Thank you very much, Lynn, for your service. And have a beautiful day, everybody. Love you all.
Thank you, Tony B. from Scotland. Leah S., you're up next, followed by Darian K. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. My name is Leah S., and I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I'm very grateful today. And I must say, what a powerful meeting. What beautiful, beautiful shares that really went to my heart, all of you. And, okay, I want to go and share. In step two, it starts with, I came to believe. I came to believe. And then there's one sentence that sticks out for me over here. It says, there's a lot of misunderstanding. And that totally identifies me. So I had to come to understand. I had to actually admit. I had to face that I am a compulsive overeater. I was given an assignment by one of my sponsors, and I was told I need to write down how many times I overeat or I pop something into my mouth. And I started doing that, and then I said, I got to stop this. I can't do this assignment. And she said, why? I said, well, it takes time itself, you know. It's time consuming. You can't do this anymore. You just can't. And then she said it was the wrong answer. You got to work on this assignment. And I started thinking a little deeper about myself. Why didn't I want to take this responsibility of writing this, how many times I pop something into my mouth? Spontaneously, unconsciously, whatever it is. And I realized I don't want to take that responsibility. I don't want to face up to it. I don't want to. And then all the truths came to me. So I came to believe I do have a disease. And I need to say it. And I don't say it with pain. I say it because this disease has brought me so many pluses in my life, so many positives in my life, because it gives me a way of living. These 12 steps give me a direction, and it is so simple. And what is not simple is also simple. And I don't have to be the one to solve all the problems in this world. I can't solve any of my own either. All I have to surrender. There's one God that just does it. He runs the world. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, S. from Brooklyn. Next up, we have Darian K., followed by Larry K. Good morning, Darian.
Hey, Lynn. How are you doing? It's Darian Kay. I'm in the Berkshires in Massachusetts and grateful to be in recovery and on a beautiful meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, studying the big book. And the first thing I want to say is that, you know, we carry the message. We don't criticize the message. So that being said, you know, we have this disease. And the last person that I want to make me feel bad, somebody in program. I know it's, or to have a resentment with, that's even worse, right? To have a resentment with someone in program, that just feels yucky. So, you know, it is a disease, and it's, there are certain things that we all do to arrest our disease a day at a time. And if it works for you, thank you, God. Thank you, God. You are another miracle sitting or listening in on this line. And, you know, when I was listening to the reading, I thought, well, yeah, alcohol, yeah, definitely. Boy, that's a big deal. You know, it definitely rips apart families and, you know, the gutter drunks that lose everything. Well, that's not me. And then I thought, well, yeah, it definitely could be. Because there's a different way that it affects us, of course, not exactly the same, but there's parallels, and there's definitely similarities, if you will, to what our disease causes. It's a ripple effect for sure, and it does affect the other people in our lives. And I never wanted to see that. I never even wanted to believe that, because I just thought I was fat and unhappy and I needed a diet and everything would be fine. And it's my problem, nobody else's problem. And, you know, why would it affect anyone else? I know so much better today because I see that. And I even see that in program when I'm carrying a resentment or when I'm feeling off or whatever, because we're, you know, perfectly imperfect people. I see how it affects the people closest to me, especially. And so, I, a day at a time, there are certain things I need to do. And then I also just need to, what do they say, the three A's? I love those, acceptance. No, awareness, acceptance, and action. I heard that at a meeting, and I love that because, you know, it's just so important in that order, too, so that we can, you know, become better people when we know better. So I'm just grateful and grateful that I have this program and that, you know, it not only helps me to live a better life and become my authentic self, but it also helps the people around me indirectly. So it's a beautiful thing. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Darian Kay from Massachusetts. Larry, it's your turn. Please go ahead, followed by Christiana Kay.
Hey, Lynn. Good morning. Larry K., recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. You know, when I read this paragraph, it reminds me this disease is like a wildfire. It consumes everything in its path. It spreads beyond the individual. It leaves, emotional destruction and financial ashes. And it affects everyone in its wake, you know. And the thing is, there's just like a fire, there's an initial spark that ignites the flame. Might start out, you know, pretty basic, but our condition of compulsive overeating quickly consumes everything in its path, and it's impossible to control because unlike a fire where the, you know, eventually the dry grass burns and the fire is eventually contained, you know, it's eventually put out, there's no end to the fire for us. It keeps regenerating. It consumes the forest over and over and over again. We see the little spark. We light the spark each time. And so this is why the blame is put on us, because the fire's heat destroys not only our sense of well-being, leading to morbid obesity and diabetes and anorexic behaviors and ultimately death, but it touches everybody else and it expands. And the smoke chokes off relationships. They're constantly coughing and wondering, you know, why we can't stop. You know, it smolders and they watch us struggle, and it destroys them, the people around us, a little bit each day, and they never get a reprieve. And because it's misunderstood, this illness, you know, my family members were, you know, they were able to moderate their eating. They didn't start a fire. So to them, it appears that we can control this if we wanted it bad enough. So it leaves them angry and frustrated. The thing is, just as nature can regenerate, recovery is possible. It requires, you know, working the steps. And then the seeds left in the soil after the fire allow for growth and renewal. That's the deal, you know. And then you can see green pop up. Green, you know, all around can start to, and people see that. Our family members see it. It takes them a while, but they see it too. It's extraordinary. With that, I pass. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Larry K. from Chicago. Next up, we have Christiana K., followed by Melissa B. Good morning, Christiana.
Good morning, everyone. Christiana, compulsive overeater in California. Can I be heard?
Yeah, it's kind of funny in the background there, but it's good. Please go ahead.
Oh, okay. Let me know if you can't hear me. Yes, I am so grateful that I joined today. It's a beautiful day to be abstinent, and I'm so grateful for this program. This paragraph, it just took me back to when I started, I just turned 3 years abstinent yesterday, which is a miracle of miracles. And this paragraph reminded me, I was so completely hopeless and broken, and just resigned to the fact that I was just gonna get bigger and bigger and sicker and die. I had tried so many things, and I was didn't know what else to do. And thank God for that. It didn't feel like a gift then, but it was such a gift, because that's the only way that I was able to not listen to myself and listen to my sponsor's directions. I got a sponsor right away, and I wanted what she had, right? So I was so surrendered that I could listen to her, because I wanted what she had, to her direction. And I am very grateful that I went through all the, as the paragraph says here, the disgusted friends and family members, and myself too, because I to this day, I only know two things that will calm this illness, this thing, this in my soul, right? Which and one is food, and the other is the steps. and I'm so grateful that we have the steps and that we have all these tools, the plan of action, the telephone, the writing. Oh my goodness, so there's such clarity, and I'm grateful that I don't have to be pushing people away anymore, because I was doing that towards the end, because I was so insecure, right? I needed you to think that I was becoming arrogant out of insecurity and being a control freak with my family and
time, please.
Pushing people away. Thank you. And today I don't have to do that. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Christiana K. in California. Melissa C., welcome. Oh, sorry, Melissa B.
Hey, good. It's Melissa C. Yeah, thanks, Lynn. Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm really grateful to be on this meeting this morning. And, you know, I'm thinking about the fact that this is a disease and how learning that was, it was like a huge relief, you know, because it was no longer my fault. But then it kind of came with the other side, which went, it may not be my fault, but now this is my responsibility. Because if I know it's a disease, then I have to take it seriously like it is a disease. And I was thinking too, like, you know, like, what is my disease, right? Yeah, I've got an allergy of the body, and I have, but I've got this obsession of the mind. And the obsession of my mind is because selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of my problem. Like, my deep disease is that I am a freaking selfish, self-centered person. And that is something that I can only go to God to help me remove. And I think, you know, in my selfishness and self-centered thinking, my quick, you know, reading of this paragraph is like, yeah, no, I never affected really anybody. You know, what are you talking about? And then I had to think, my God, of course it did. I could hardly hold my infant son because of morbid obesity. And I couldn't keep up with him because of morbid obesity. You know, I think about my husband who, you know, when I married him, I was thin. I was in a good spell. And then I gained, you know, 100 pounds, like the snap of a finger. And that causes problems for a marriage. That causes discontent and unhappiness. And how many times I canceled plans with people last minute because, as someone said, you know, I called in fat. Like, I couldn't find something to wear, and so I was so selfish and self-centered, I could care less about how that was affecting other people. And I think about, you know, my mom, many, many years ago, I got off the plane, and I had gained a ton of weight again in a short amount of time. And I remember the horror on my mother's face. And, you know, and of course I got angry, like, you know, indignant and angry, and she doesn't love me because I'm fat and all that bullshit, you know. And the truth is, I'm a mother today, and there is nothing that's more painful than seeing your child in pain. So I get it. You know, this is a disease, and it caused horror for my family. And the real solution has been, like, to rid myself of selfishness, self-centered thinking. And that could only be done by a spiritual awakening. Only God can change this selfish person into someone who thinks about other people, you know, not all the time, but that is always my, like, that's always my guiding force. Like, God, please help me think more about others and less about me. And thanks. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you. And I really do know that you are Melissa C. from New York. Okay, we have time for 1 2-minute share. Who would like that time, please? Anybody? Well, okay, I'm not hearing anybody then. So why don't we say thank you to everybody who shared, and thank you to Team Thursday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, Thursday, February the 5th, the 7 a.m. meeting is 23186. That's 23186. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And today, Martha Z is going to read A Vision for You, Our Book is Meant to Be Suggestive Only. Welcome, Martha.
Thank you, Lynn. Good morning, my friends in recovery. This is Martha Z. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater by the grace of God from outside of Philadelphia. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until